Hello everyone, this is Asclepius, with a wonderful story, written by Style Tekel and Gabriel Nightshadow. It represents Style's biography, and it is entitled The Lord of the Manor. Background music by Smart Sound. The Lord of the Manor, by Style Tekel and Gabriel Nightshadow. Chapter 1, Legacy. As Style Tekel entered the immense display room of his late grandfather's home, he still couldn't believe that he was gone. Joseph Tekel had passed away 2 weeks ago at the ripe old age of 100. A world-renowned retired archaeologist, he had spent most of life travelling to exotic locales and discovering rare artifacts, many of which were now on display in the most famous museums around the world. Quite a few of these rare artifacts remained in his personal collection, stored here in his Tudor-style home, which he had shared with his late wife Mary, who had passed away 10 years ago. Style still couldn't quite understand why his grandfather had left his home and its contents to him in his will, rather than his daughter, Style's mom, Nyssa. One display case suddenly caught Style's attention. Inside was a full-length oval-shaped mirror with solid gold frame. The frame itself was encrusted with rare and precious gems and strange-looking runes which Style did not recognize. The small computer display screen next to the case indicated that this item was Nistel's Mirror of Infinite Wonder. Nistel? That name seemed vaguely familiar. Style suddenly remembered that dark and stormy night 30 years ago when his grandfather had come to visit and told him a fairy tale about a far-off land he had once visited long ago known as New Britannia, ruled over by the wise and powerful monarch known as Lord British. Lord British often relied on the counsel of the mysterious prophet known as Nestle, or Time Lord as he was more commonly known. But that was a fairy tale, wasn't it? Style was intrigued by the artifact. Could it be a portal to this other world, which his grandfather had spoken of? If Style could decipher the runes, perhaps he could discover how to activate it. Style searched all of the other display cases in the room, but was unable to find anything that might help him decipher the strange runes. Style sat down at the table in the centre of the room and pulled out his laptop. He began an online search. After many hours, he discovered that, although the runes bore many similarities to several ancient languages, there didn't seem to be an exact match in any known Earth database. Style was growing frustrated. He remembered that his late grandfather had told him that tale for a reason. For Joseph had made Style swear never to repeat it to anyone else. Perhaps there was a clue in the tale. Style glanced over once at the computer screen next to the display case. He walked over to it and noticed several keys marked on the keyboard underneath it. One was a red button marked Administrator. Style pressed it, and the computer requested his user ID. Style glanced at the description of the item on the line above it again. No, it couldn't be that simple, Style thought to himself. He typed in Time Lord. Suddenly, Style heard an audible click and a hidden panel opened up in the floor directly in front of the display case. Style went over to investigate. Inside, he found three items. Two massive leather-bound volumes, which had been well preserved in the hidden compartment, and something which resembled a metal, circular, compact powder case. One of the leather-bound volumes was his late grandfather's journal, which was entitled My Adventures in New Britannia. The other volume was entitled A Guide to the Runic Language, written by someone named Dame Laurie. Style opened up the compact case and saw a miniature version of the mirror embedded in the lower half. The runes surrounding the miniature mirror began to glow. Style quickly closed the compact and put it in his pants pocket. He placed the two leather-bound volumes on the table in the centre of the room. The display screen suddenly went blank, and a pre-recorded video made by his late grandfather, Joseph, began to play.
"Hello, Style," said Joseph. "It's me, Grandpa. If you're watching this, it means I've finally moved on and joined your late grandmother up in heaven. As you might have guessed, that tale I told you many years ago when you were a child really did happen. On an archaeological dig many years ago in ancient China, I happened to stumble through a lunar rift and ended up in the land known as New Britannia. I helped their monarch, Lord British, and his advisor, Nestle, locate and recover an ancient artifact, which they used to defeat a powerful foe who was terrorizing the land. In recognition for my help, Lord British knighted me and requested that I stay in New Britannia and help them rebuild the kingdom after the devastation caused by their foe. But I knew that my place was here on Earth with your grandmother, so I declined. Nistle told me he had foreseen a time in the distant future when you would come to New Britannia and aid their champion, the Avatar, and his companions in their battle against an even more powerful foe. I have left you a few items that will help you in that respect. When you are ready to travel to New Britannia, touch the runes surrounding the miniature mirror in the compact in sequence to spell out the word Avatar. Good luck, Style. I know you will make me proud."
The video ended, and another panel suddenly opened up in the wall next to the display case, revealing a hidden compartment. Inside, Style found a jewel katana, a full suit of shiny chainmail armor, a sturdy longbow marked with glowing magic runes, a quiver full of steel arrows, a dagger, a knight's tunic, a leather backpack, and a small leather pouch filled with gold, silver, and copper coins. Style stood there for a moment and took it all in. New Britannia was real. He had the opportunity to visit a whole new world and start over again. Style took a few moments to think about his life. He was stuck in a boring, dead-end job with a nasty young female boss who was a real control freak. His lovely wife had recently left him and run off to Las Vegas with some young stud half her age, and his daughter was having an affair with her married college literature professor, who was nearly Style's age. His son had quit college to become a rapper, but having failed in that, was now a low-level drug dealer for some methamphetamine manufacturer who called himself Mr. Schweitzer. Yep, there was nothing really keeping him here. What should he do next? Style sat down at the table and began reading his grandfather's journal. Chapter 2. Preparing for the Journey. After spending the next several months reading both volumes, Style was able to gain a basic understanding of the written runic language, the spoken language, and the history and culture of New Britannia. However, Style soon realized that he needed more detailed knowledge before he could cross over to this new realm. Using instructions which his grandfather had left in his journal, Style discovered that the mirror could also be used as a viewing screen into New Britannia. By pressing a specific rune sequence on the compact, he could access a specific lunar rift and view the activity in the surrounding area. In this mode, he could see what the inhabitants of New Britannia were doing, but they would be unable to see him, i.e. one-way viewing only. His grandfather had conveniently listed the rune sequences for all of the major lunar rifts scattered throughout New Britannia in his journal. So over the course of the next several years, Style was able to gain a deeper understanding of the spoken language, clothing, and local customs of the people inhabiting each region of New Britannia. As Style began observing the people of New Britannia through the magic mirror, he began searching for a native who he believed could help him enact his master plan in this strange new world. After 5 years of careful observation, Stahl finally believed he had the ideal candidate. Roderick was the younger son of an important duke. Unlike his older, well-respected brother, Robert, young Roderick was only interested in having a good time and wasted much of his father's money on booze and whores. Eventually, he was kicked out of the family castle by his father and stricken from his will. Penniless and lacking any real skills, Roderick only had his good looks and charm to rely on. Through a female prostitute he knew, he made contact with the notorious thief known as Red Badger and became his apprentice. Roderick soon discovered that he had a knack for thievery and surveillance, and he and Red Badger soon developed a reputation as the best team of thieves in all of Novia. For a while, all went well, and both Roderick and the Red Badger were living a life of luxury with their ill-gotten gain. But then came the day when Red Badger got too ambitious and decided that they should break into Lord British's private vault at night and steal some of his most rare and powerful artifacts. After breaking into the vault, Red Badger accidentally alerted the guards to their presence. Red Badger managed to escape with a few of the artifacts, but Roderick was caught by the guards and sentenced to life in prison. After a year behind bars, Roderick managed to escape and was now on the run. "This man Roderick definitely has the skills I'm looking for," Stahl thought to himself. "I will look him up immediately upon my arrival in New Britannia." Shortly after his 35th birthday, Stahl invited his mother, Nyssa, over for dinner. Afterwards, he showed her everything his grandfather had left him in the display room and revealed his plans to her.
"But Stahl, you're talking about the rest of your life," exclaimed Nyssa. "Are you sure this is what you want to do?"
"Mum, I've never been more sure of anything in my life," replied Stahl. "There's nothing keeping me here. In New Britannia, I have a chance to start over again and live out my dreams. And don't worry, Mum. Once I've established myself, I'll bring you over as well." "Wouldn't you like to spend your retirement years in a place like this?" said Stahl, as he pointed to an image of a busy town in New Britannia, which was displayed in the magic mirror.
"I must admit, it does have a great deal of appeal to me, son,"
said Nyssa, as she gazed longingly at the images of the townspeople going about their daily business.
"You know, I never told you this before, but it was your grandfather's tales of this realm which stirred my imagination and got me interested in role-playing games when I was a young girl. I've been writing computer code for so many years now. I was planning on finally retiring in a couple of years and taking that trip to Great Britain like I always wanted to."
"Then it's settled then," exclaimed Stahl. "I've already put my affairs in order and given you power of attorney, so you can use my bank account to pay the bills on this estate until I'm ready to bring you over. Every Friday night at 8 p.m, I will activate the magic mirror from the other side using this," shows his mum the compact, "and let you know how I'm doing."
"Okay, Stahl," replied Nyssa. "While you change into your tunic and armour, I'll pack you a nice meal. We have plenty of roast lamb, buttermilk biscuits, butternut squash and apples left over from dinner."
Stahl nodded and then retrieved all of the items from the compartment next to the display case. When he was done changing, his mum handed him the leather backpack, which was now stuffed full of food. Stahl put the backpack on. Nyssa gave her son a big hug and then began crying.
"I'm going to miss you, Stahl," she sobbed. "Your grandfather would be so proud of you right now."
"I know, Mum," replied Stahl. "I believe this is what he wanted for the both of us, to live out the rest of our lives in New Britannia like he never got the chance to." Stahl pulled out the compact and pushed a sequence of runes. The image of a forest appeared in the magic mirror, a large port city loomed in the distance. Style pressed the runes on the compact, which spelled out the word Avatar. Suddenly, all of the runes in the magic mirror began to glow, and the image shimmered for a moment. It was time to go. Style walked towards the mirror. He turned around one last time to see his mom standing there, smiling.
"Take good care of yourself, son," she said.
"I will, Mom," replied Style. "Remember, every Friday at 8 p.m. sharp." He waved to his mom one last time, then turned and stepped through the mirror. Chapter 3. Spy Master and Merchant Prince.
"There he is, men, hiding behind that tree," shouted the commander of the guards. "Grab him!"
Roderick broke cover and ran through the forest as fast as he could, but could tell from the sounds of the rapidly approaching footsteps that they were closing in on him. He felt a hand clamp down on his left shoulder.
"I've got you now,"
a guard exclaimed. Suddenly, Roderick felt an arrow whiz by him as it struck the guard in his right eye, killing him instantly. The guard fell backwards and hit the ground. Two other guards, who were a short distance behind him, immediately stopped and drew their swords.
"Where did that arrow come from?"
one shouted. Right before an arrow struck him in the chest, and he too fell to the ground, dead.
"Show yourself, coward!"
yelled the commander of the guards as he grabbed Roderick and held his sword to his throat.
"Otherwise, I'll kill your friend here."
There was no response, as the guard commander scanned the area around him for any signs of movement. The commander did not see the mysterious figure sneak up behind him and slash him in the back with a katana. The commander dropped his sword and fell to the ground dead. Roderick turned around and saw a knight clad in chain mail standing there.
"Thank you for saving me, kind sir," said Roderick. "I'm just a poor, unfortunate soul who was framed for a crime I did not commit and was forced to flee from the authorities when they didn't believe me."
The mysterious knight stared at Roderick and said, "You are not as innocent as you claim to be, Roderick. I know exactly what kind of man you truly are."
"You know me? I don't believe we've ever met before," replied a surprised Roderick.
"No, we haven't met before in person," replied the knight. "But I've been following your exploits for some time now. You have the right skills I'm looking for in an associate. Join me, and I promise you wealth and power beyond your wildest dreams. I also promise you that one day you will have your revenge against your former associate, Red Badger."
"Yes, that all sounds very tempting," said Roderick, as he raised his right eyebrow. "But why would a knight want to associate himself with someone like me?"
"My grandfather was a noble knight who once served Lord British," replied the stranger, as he held out his hand. "I'm a more practical man. Will you accept my offer?"
"Yes, I think I will," replied Roderick, shaking the stranger's hand. "So, my new friend, what shall I call you?"
"You may call me Sir Style Tekel," replied Style, as he beamed. Acting through Roderick, Sir Style began establishing his extensive spy network. Roderick would make contact with people with access to important information, such as servants of nobles, merchants, and politicians, and pay them well to spy on their employers. These spies never knew who their true employer was. Roderick simply referred to him as the Big Boss. At first, this spy network was limited to the port city which Sir Style Tekel had settled in. But over time, he had Roderick establish contacts in all of the major towns and cities he did business with. Sir Style used the information he acquired to secretly blackmail the rich and powerful and gain an unfair advantage in purchasing goods and services. As far as the public was concerned, Sir Style Tekel was simply a highly successful merchant who gave generously to help feed, house, and educate the poor. He had Roderick establish a private security force, composed mostly of former soldiers, who helped the outnumbered city guards finally eliminate the gangs of thieves and robbers who regularly prowled the city streets at night. Indeed, in a few short years, Sir Style had become one of the most influential men in that port city, and had established a vast trade empire stretching from Brittany to Port Graff in northeastern Novia and Ardoris in the southeast Novia, that's the Tackle Trade Triangle, and even beyond to the Kingsport and Owl's Head in the Hidden Vale. Chapter 4. A Greater Purpose. 5 years after his arrival in New Britannia, Sir Style Tackle had become so rich and powerful that he was elected mayor of the port city. He acquired a castle lot and had a grand castle built there, surrounded by high stone walls and a moat. Style brought his mother Nyssa over from Earth and gave her one of the guest houses on his estate. There, she was able to pursue her interests in painting, pottery, and sewing. She also became active in community events, such as the Summer Food Festival and the local poetry group, which met weekly in the public library. On Friday evenings, Style would accompany Nyssa to the local pub, where they would listen to the bards spin their tales and play their music. The local pub also was an excellent place for Style to secretly seduce the beautiful, young, local girls, for he had a healthy sexual appetite, and he found that the daughters of the nobles whom he met at the charity balls and other major gatherings of the nobility to be rather passionless and boring. Life was good for Sir Style on both a personal and business level. The only major rival he had to contend with in the business arena was Duke Garin, who was a member of the Great Council. As the head of one of the most powerful families in the kingdom, Duke Garin had used his wealth and influence to expand his trade empire. Until recently, Duke Garin had focused on building his empire in the western half of Novia, but now he sought to expand into Sir Style's territory. Roderick and his spies had not been able to uncover much information about the mysterious Duke Garin, who was rarely ever seen in public. There were rumours that Duke Garin was not actually the late Duke's legitimate heir, that his mother had actually had an affair with another noble and passed off the offspring as the late Duke's. But without some sort of proof, that bit of information was of no value to him. As Sir Style sat at his desk in his study pondering his next move, he received two most unexpected guests. A white-bearded figure clad in an orange robe and carrying a sturdy wooden staff suddenly appeared before him in a puff of white smoke. Behind him stood another slightly younger-looking white-bearded figure clad in a purple wizard's robes and wearing a pointed wizard's hat. He held a long, curvy staff which was covered in magic runes and had a glowing red gem on top.
"Greetings, Sir Style," said the white-bearded figure. "Do not be alarmed. We mean you no harm. Allow me to introduce myself. I am Nistel, and this is my good friend, Lord Baldrith."
"Nistel?" exclaimed Sir Style. "Are you the same Nistel who befriended my grandfather Joseph many years ago?"
"Indeed I am, Sir Style," replied Nistel. "You have done quite well for yourself these past 5 years, as I knew you would. As I predicted, Roderick has proven to be a good right-hand man."
"You know Roderick?" asked Sir Style.
"Not in this form, of course," replied Nistel. 5 years ago, I disguised myself as a guard at the prison he was being held in, and secretly aided him in his escape."
"I see," said Sir Style, stroking his chin. "So, everything that has transpired these past 5 years has been part of some sort of master plan of yours."
"You are a bright fellow indeed, Sir Style," answered Nestle. "A grave threat to all of New Britannia will soon be upon us. Your role is to help support the Avatar and his other companions, such as Lord Baldrith here, by providing them intelligence gathered through your spy network, resources, and access to important people and places through your personal contacts."
"I think I can handle that," replied Sir Style.
"Good to hear that," replied Nistel,
who suddenly had a very serious look on his face.
"Sir Style, Your hand-to-hand and ranged combat skills are quite good, but they will be of little use against someone like your new business rival, Duke Garen. You may not realize this, but he is a powerful sorcerer, well-versed in the dark arts. In order to stand any chance against him, you will have to learn the skills of magic as well. I've brought Lord Baldrith here to instruct you.
I see, said Sir Stile. I was unaware that Duke Garen practiced sorcery. No disrespect, Lord Baldrith, but are you a highly skilled mage?
I would say so, since I studied with the best, answered a grinning Lord Baldrith. I was Nistel's finest apprentice.
Indeed he was, said Nistel, as he nodded approvingly. I've never met anyone else with such a talent for magic. I must go now and continue my search for the new avatar, declared Nistel. I leave you in Lord Baldrith's capable hands.
Nistel vanished in a puff of white smoke. Does he pop in and out like that all of the time? Asked Sir Stile.
You'll get used to it after a while, answered Lord Baldrith, as he shrugged his shoulders. Be thankful that he's not as bad as his cousin Mingo.
So, Lord Baldrith, where do we begin? Asked Sir Stile.
I think we should start with the life school of magic, replied Lord Baldrith, as he stroked his long white beard. We do want you to stay alive during combat, after all.
The beginning. Echoes.
Echoes.
Echoes. From the Caverns is brought to you by Lord Baldrith, Asclepius, and Sir Stile Teckle. Do you have a piece that you'd like us to read? Please contact us at lordbaldrith@thecaverns.net, asclepius@thecaverns.net, or style@thecaverns.net.